morning, colleagues. Good morning, colleagues. It's really good to be here, and I want to thank first of all Professor Teresa O'Doherty for her kind introduction, and also Professor Kathy Hall and Dr. Noel Purdy for the kind invitation to speak at this conference. This is my first visit to Ireland, and I'm very happy to be here. I would also like to thank the staff at Scotland's HQ, especially Tricia Kelly, who have organized and arranged things for me. I can say without your help to this point, things could not have gone as smoothly. And I want to thank you, colleagues, each of you, who have turned up to this lecture this morning to listen and to engage with me. I am grateful. In trying to connect the main theme, leadership across boundaries, challenges for educators and teacher educators with my work, I have decided to speak on the topic, equity work as social justice. Is there a role for teachers, school leaders, and teacher educators? In deciding to speak on this topic, I have opted to focus on aspects of my research on race and educational leadership in the UK, and aspects of my work on leadership and social justice elsewhere. I do not claim to know the lay of the land in either the north or south of Ireland, and so references to Ireland will be kept to a minimum. Nevertheless, I hope this presentation will provide both insights and strategies for colleagues in Ireland, north and south, and from elsewhere in terms of research, leadership, and practice. The aim of my talk, therefore, is a conscious attempt to move beyond simply highlighting existing problems, although my starting point is an acknowledgement of such problems, but rather to imagine and propose ways of working with, within, without, and around these problems in moving our practice and leadership forward. Conference, having gotten the introductory remarks out of the way, I will now move to the main talk. Race and schools in England. There are approximately 24,281 state-funded schools in England, 3,446 state secondary schools, and just under 17,000 state primary schools. In January 2018, there were just over 8.6 million pupils attending state-funded primary and secondary schools, special schools, and pupil referral units. In primary schools, 32% of pupils are of minority ethnic origins, an increase from 31.4% in 2016. Minority ethnic pupils make up 66.3% of pupils of the increase in pupils in primary schools between 2016 and 2017. In secondary schools, 29.1% of pupils are of minority ethnic origin, an increase in 27.9% in 2016. In terms of staffing, however, there are approximately 452,000 teachers in the state sector in England, including the 24,281 principals. Of the total numbers of teachers, 86.5%, or 395,564, are white British. There are approximately 3.8%, or 17,000 teachers from other white backgrounds, whilst white Irish, 1.7%, or just over 7,000, and Indian and Pakistani and others are the next largest groups of teachers. As a group, there are 5,424 teachers of mixed heritage. Of the approximately 452,000 teachers in England, approximately 25,700 are from Black, Asian, and Minority Ethnic, or BAME, heritage. Let me say that again. Of the approximately 452,000 teachers in England, approximately 25,716 are from Black, Asian, and Minority heritage. Of this number of 25,000, 1,200 are in leadership positions, which comprises approximately 278 Black, Asian, and Minority ethnic teachers who are head teachers, and approximately 950 deputy head teachers and assistant head teachers. These figures have prompted many debates, leading several researchers and teaching unions to conclude that many educational institutions in England are racist. Let's look at the picture in higher education. Data from the Higher Education Statistical Agency, HESA, suggests that there are approximately 1.8 million students in UK higher education. Of this number, the ethnicity of just over 33,000 is unknown. Of the 1.7 million whose ethnicity is known, however, 21% are of BME heritage. In terms of staffing, there are approximately 192 academic staff at UK universities. Only 6.7 or 12,000 are from BAME heritage. In 2017, the UK's approximately 14,200 male professors, more than 12,000 were white, while only 90 are Black. Of the UK's approximately 4,735 female professors, more than 4,000 are white and only 25 are Black. These figures have led Back and others to argue that higher education in England remains hideously white, both in terms of the student body and the staffing. Furthermore, Pilkington has proposed that England's HEIs are oblivious to inequalities. As this conference is a conference on teacher education, I thought I'd share some examples from the sector. I summarize the findings of three studies below. Landa 2011 study, entitled An Exploration of the Perspectives of White Secondary Student Teachers About Race and Race Equality Issues in Their Teacher Education. Vinnie Landa, argued that teacher education in England is set largely within a white majority context. In other words, ITE programs, or initial teacher education programs, tend to have predominantly white staff with mainly white students. In her study, Landa found that white students felt they were ill-prepared to deal with race and diversity in the classroom, and that the content of race was peripheral, as teacher educators felt constrained by the pressures of time. Landa therefore argued that the remit for such courses presents a challenge for tutors and students alike, because the constraints of time and content mitigate against developing a conceptual understanding of equality issues. Unsurprisingly then, in the same study, 63% of NQTs, or newly qualified teachers, felt their preparation to teach pupils from BAME heritage was satisfactory or worse. Student teachers in Landa's study argued they were learning about issues related to race from experience rather than from any preparation from their course, and that the lack of focus on race issues may be due to their location and such issues such as the lack of ethnic diversities. For example, Stewart argued, we are told to be aware of gender issues and race issues, but we weren't told necessarily what they were or what to do when they arose. No specifics, no sort of case study type thing. Furthermore, Stella argued, every school is different policy-wise. I wouldn't know how they would want me to handle it. I wouldn't know how I would like to handle it either, to be fair. Stewart argued, there have been a few instances in school which I thought I would have been prepared for, but they took me aback. And some of the language heard used by students, pupils, and non-teaching staff, I found this quite shocking. I wasn't sure how to actually deal with it, especially the staff, because this is something you don't expect, and it took me aback. But I was trying to work out whether that was malicious or just because it was different. I hadn't a clue how to deal with it. I didn't know whether I was meant to take it further, so I had to ask around, what would you do? And different teachers said different things. These and other revelations led Lander to conclude that educating student teachers in a predominantly white area poses additional challenges in terms of their starting points regarding race, and that there is need to educate some of them to develop a positive disposition to the presence of pupils from BME backgrounds or from those from whom English is an additional language, and not to perceive them as a problem to tackle or ignore. Let's consider another study that compares teacher educators' perspective on race in England and Scotland. Rowena Arshad and colleagues, in their study, Educating the Teachers for Tomorrow, Race, Equality and Diversity in the 21st Century, focused on 17 teacher educators in England and Scotland. Among teacher educators in Scotland, they found sexual orientation and race were the least talked about equity issues among teacher educators. They also found that teacher educators' awareness of equity issues varied and were influenced by their personal experiences of equality issues, previous experiences of living or working in diverse settings, or having an ideological or theoretical basis for engaging with social justice issues. And on the subject of race in particular, geography and location help to shape opinions as well as learning from students as diversity increases in their schools, the media, and from the personal exposure to instances of race discrimination. Conference, these issues were compounded by cultural attitudes such as, we are all Jock Tamsin's Barnes or Bairns, meaning we are all the same under the skin. A belief that as a nation, Scotland is fair, tolerant, welcoming, and friendly. In other words, there is no problem. Low numbers of visible minorities keeps issues hidden or marginal, and the homogeneity of IT staff and student cohorts. Among teacher educators in England in particular, they found the following challenges. Representation was a problem, and there could be no change without changing the culture of schools. There were curricular constraints. There was the erosion of placement opportunities. And teacher educators lacked confidence to talk about race and the tools to challenge racism. Teacher educators also felt underprepared to talk about race and racism. Some teacher educators, for example, argued, I feel I need an awful lot. And I am sure most people, even down to the basic, the correct terminology to use, you know, the labels bandied about, and I don't know in some areas which is politically correct. I am aware that the terminology is changed, but I am not up to speed. What I have found when I have talked with other staff who are from non-minority ethnic backgrounds on race and ethnicity is that everybody is on the defensive. People are on the defensive often because they think you are suggesting they are not working sensitively with students, or if they are not aware of the issues, they are racist. By the time they come to us, they do have their views already fixed in their minds, or are their issues on race that they are going to pass on? Is this something that they have inherited from their home life? And also, on the other side, do we actually give them enough tools to deal with race in the classroom? I don't think we do. We tell them this is what you should do in the classroom as far as teaching materials are concerned. But how do we deal with it in the classroom? I don't think we do that at all. Although I will not delve into Wilkins's study on race and Ofsted and ITE 2014, the key findings covered by the standards for student teachers are worth considering. And Wilkins, in respect of the statutory guidance for teachers' standards and professional standards, he found that despite the extensive nature of the guidance provided to educational institutions, as set out in a 63 pages document, according to Wilkins, the attention given to matters of race equality and diversity is almost non-existent, with just a handful of references to wider equality issues. In fact, according to Wilkins, the entire document contains only one single explicit reference to racism. The emphasis then, according to Wilkins, is on awareness and not action, since it refers to students' awareness of the range of policies that support schools' practice. For example, those that relate to equality, behavior including bullying, racial harassment and abuse, and special education needs. Accordingly, Wilkins argues, these questions, however, seem crafted to deliberately reduce racism to its surface phenomenon of individual prejudice overlaid by notions of difference and diversity rather than a structural phenomenon. This, in turn, limits schools to simply address the outward manifestations of racism, harassment, and abuse, rather than challenging it as a matter of structure and fundamental social justice. Wilkins also found that the guidance provided for initial teacher training institutions, according to what was then the TDA, the Training Development Agency, was also problematic. Despite the guidance included several references for promoting equality of opportunity, equality of access, and avoiding discrimination in these requirements relating to the recruitment and selection, with further references occurring in training requirements. According to the professional standards, however, although guidance on recruit requirements is extensive, 53 pages, the issue of race, according to Wilkins, was conspicuously lacking. Accordingly, Wilkins argues that the questions posed to initial teacher education providers, these questions suggest a preoccupation with policy, procedures, and tutor training needs. Much of the guidance is taken up with listing the relevant legislation providers are obliged to respond to. In other words, it's a tick box exercise. Thus, Wilkins also argue, the message is that these providers are successful in the core elements of their provision, but have some minor weaknesses in peripheral issues, such as race, equality. Conference, having given you a snapshot of the problem of race in education in England, let's move forward to examples of how educators in England and Jamaica are confronting and resolving some social justice dilemmas, including race. Miller et al., in their study, Social Justice Work as Activism, the Work of Education Professionals in England and Jamaica, interviewed a small group of teachers, school leaders, academics, and school governors. And together, these were called education professionals. About, firstly, their understanding, and secondly, their doing of social justice in their day-to-day work roles. The main question of the study was, how do different education professionals do social justice work? And I've put the subsidiary questions on the board. Before sharing the findings from that study with you, and before answering the questions posed in the topic of my talk, is there a role for teachers, school leaders, and teacher educators? Please allow me to clarify my value positions. First, education professionals can hinder or enhance the effectiveness of their institutions to support and meet the needs of students. Second, being able to push back against the practices and events in the socioeconomic and political environments that do not promote equity for all students in terms of opportunities and outcomes is the work of social justice educators, irrespective of your position or rank. And as we saw from the examples provided by Wilkins' evaluation of the standards for teachers, the policy environment can restrict or emancipate social justice work at the institutional level. Nevertheless, as articulated by the OECD, equity in education is a matter of design and concerted policy effort. Put differently, as educators or education professionals, we cannot afford to be complicit with systems and practices, whether institutional and or policy level, that undermine fairness in the most basic ways we treat and relate to each other and to our students. At a time of populism, we cannot afford to be complicit. At a time of increasing performativity pressures, we cannot afford to be complicit. At a time of increased nationalist rhetoric, we cannot afford to be complicit. As leaders, teachers, teacher educators, we have to be prepared to call out isms, discernible or observable, in our classrooms, staff rooms, boardrooms. In other words, we have to be activists, challenging our practice, the practice of our colleagues, the practice of our institutions, the policies of the system, and where necessary, in the ways we can assist our institutions and the system as a whole to redefine its boundaries and its practices instead of accepting and being defined by preset boundaries. Conference, education work is activism. And we have an enormous responsibility to position ourselves as central to creating and leading change in staff rooms and boardrooms and in our classrooms by changing curricula, changing conversations, changing practice, and influencing policy. But to do so, we must move ourselves from our comfort zones, from accepting that things have to be this way, from accepting that the solution will come from high or from elsewhere, to being actively engaged in thinking through and inventing tactics and to being part of the solution. In other words, whilst we work within the system and work with the system, we must also be prepared to constructively challenge aspects of the system that do not work, and we must be prepared to put forward potential solutions to the problems we know exist or to the ones we have identified. Moving from talk to action requires activism, and social justice leadership and social justice teaching requires activism. Conference, now that I've gotten my value position clear, I will return to the study by my colleagues and I, and in doing so, I will now share some of the key conceptual messages and some of the findings. Social justice leadership, according to Bogach, is social justice, like education, a deliberate intervention that requires the moral use of power. According to Bogach, let me say it again, social justice, like education, is a deliberate intervention that requires the moral use of power. In terms of social justice leaders, my colleagues and I argue that social justice leaders try to right wrongs inflicted on marginalized groups, as well as use their power, their position, to create safe spaces and opportunities that promote equity between individuals and groups. Thus, social justice leadership is activist, both in its intent and its approach. And social justice leaders understand the material, economic, and social differences between these different groups. It is with this understanding that they focus on creating equity-based opportunities for all. Social justice leaders move beyond equality debate to equity debates by setting out to change systems, processes, and structures to better understand the needs of students. Education professionals with this orientation are activist leaders who work to create justice in schools for all who study and work in them. And social justice leaders interpret their roles as not one which is limited to being a teacher or leader, but also one of activism working towards empowerment and equity. I now share some of the findings from the study, which are linked to the key questions asked. The first theme was understanding social justice. And the question was, what does social justice mean to you? Participants understood the complexity of the concept of social justice, and therefore the difficulty in defining the actual term. However, they suggested social justice was about including others, developing others, providing a clean and safe environment for staff and students, and promoting inclusive leadership and teaching practices. Whereas the Jamaican participants located their understanding of social justice around tackling material deprivation, participants from England understood social justice as especially promoting equity amongst racial and ethnic lines. We see somebody arguing social justice means equity and fair treatment in how resources are allocated, how workloads are designed, how individual and groups are treated, in particular those from minoritized backgrounds. And question two, doing social justice work. Question was, how do you do social justice work in your work context? Participants provided several suggestions and examples based on, one, their institutional context, and two, their position within these organizations and their role, their job role within these organizations. Although there were noticeable differences in how participants enacted social justice work in their institutional context, a singular and consistent element of their responses was the activist orientation attached to their roles, as evidenced by the active verbs used to describe their actions. For example, I use, I ensure, I consider, and I create, I lobby, I do. And all of these positive activist verbs, I advise students, I work, I suggest, I raise concerns of inequity with school leaders, and I challenge practices that foster or encourage mistreatment of others. Participants also supported these comments with examples of how they do social justice work in their context. For example, one principal said, all levels of staff are given equal treatment of how important they are in this institution. I show respect to the groundsman, to the cleaner, to the security, for them to understand they are as important to this organization as the teachers or the auxiliary staff. A leader exercising social justice is one that shows inclusion. She goes on to say, students at my school are taught to be social justice advocates. They are also encouraged not to stigmatize and isolate students who are less fortunate and who may have a disability. There is a deliberate effort to encourage equity, respect, and understanding within and outside the classroom. I make the effort to give voice to all students, and I fight for my students in cases where I feel they have been wronged. The impact of social justice work. What impact does your practice as a social justice leader or practitioner have on your organization as a whole and or individuals within your organization? Participants provided examples of primarily qualitative measures used to assess the impact of their work. As one principal noted, my staff have taught me lessons about my role as a leader, and as a result, I have been forced to be more reflective before and after my encounters with them to ensure I have not been unfair in any way. My practice also impacts my students as I demonstrate equity in distributing resources and privileges. And I fight for the rights and reasonable interests of individuals, particularly my students, to ensure they are not shortchanged. For example, when students fail marginally and my colleagues remark with the aim of finding a mark or two to save those students, I insist I am not getting involved in such practices because it's unfair. I insist that if such remarking will be done for a few students, it should be done for all students. In a few instances where I have faced such dilemma, I have provided the entire class or group with the opportunity to resubmit their work, thereby giving everyone the opportunity to score higher. Widening and deepening social justice work. In what ways can you improve your practice as a social justice leader or practitioner? And what support do you need? And how can this support be provided? Participants discussed different ways they felt they could improve social justice work in their institutions. Furthermore, they also identified specific tools they could use to enhance and improve their practice. Working with others was a significant finding among participants. The Jamaican principal and the university lecturer in England both provided lists of personal commitments to deepening social justice work in their context. I will seek to more effectively model emotional intelligence to all staff. I will ensure that appropriate programs are put in place from the guidance department to help staff and students. I will ensure that all staff are provided with training and developmental workshop to build them professionally, intellectually, and emotionally. I will model social justice practices that teachers can emulate. I will ensure that appropriate parenting workshops are provided to parents to build their self-esteem, which in turn will help build the self-esteem of their children. I will continue to speak out against race and ethnic inequalities in education and in our institutions. But to stand the chance of having an impact, I will work much more collaboratively with colleagues, white and non-white, to get the message across that race ethnicity is wrong and is impeding the progress of not just individuals and schools, but also of society. Perhaps then, school leaders and governors will commit to taking responsibility for implementing interventions at institutional levels. And there were other suggestions from other speakers within the research. But from this study, two main themes emerged: doing right by others and fighting for the rights and for what's due. Please note the active verbs: doing right by others and fighting. In fighting for the rights, or in trying to do the right by others, these education professionals embarked on three interrelated approaches to doing social justice work, described herein as pedagogic activism, emancipatory activism, and regulatory activism. Pedagogic activism involves decisions taken by the education professionals to upskill and upbuild students and to provide them with essential skills and knowledge to flourish in society. As a Jamaican teacher of Spanish noted, she was not preparing her students to pass a test, but for their effective functioning in the global world. My colleagues and I therefore argued, there is no doubt that there are multiple factors that may impact students' ability to thrive at school. However, what these education professionals were clear about was that their pedagogic practices and that of their colleagues should not be held up as one of these factors. Consequently, there was a consciousness and a mindfulness among education professionals as they sought to challenge classroom and other practices which could be interpreted as having a potential to be detrimental to students. Regulatory activism. The education professionals in this study were invested in fighting for their students and for improvements in their experience. This involves working within and or without national policies to ameliorate and or to remedy perceived injustices and inconsistent practices. This position is perhaps best understood by a statement made by former Jamaican Prime Minister P.J. Patterson in 1998, who suggested, "The law is not a shackle to enslave, it is a tool of social engineering." This view is supported by Riley, who describes successful leaders as rule breakers willing to change in response to new circumstances. For example, in challenging pedagogic and assessment practices that appeared to advantage some and not all students, the education professionals were trying to reduce the risk of misunderstandings and accusations emerging, as well as trying to achieve consistency in how relevant policies were applied and understood. This position, of course, acknowledges the complexity of doing social justice work, since the application of policies should be directed with impartiality, fairness, and justice. Finally, emancipatory activism. This involves standing up for others. And it means standing up to others, to institutions, to individuals, and to policies, and being willing to do things differently. This is about change. As noted by Pickerer, those who are committed to social justice will work within their institutions to banish oppression in any of its forms and to create opportunities for all students to be enfranchised. From the data, we saw one university lecturer was quite focused on fighting for the rights and reasonable interests of her students, in particular regarding the equitable distribution of resources and in their assessment. In addition, she also emphasized that to reduce college-wide partiality in grading, she was engaging with colleagues in discussions about practices and behaviors which could promote and or reify social injustice. The commitment of education professionals to talk with other colleagues, to lobby their students, and seek changes to institutional systems is congruent with Dantley's and Tillman's argument that engaging in social justice debates are avenues through which we can generate meaningful ideas that can be implemented to better serve the needs of our students. The primary school principal commented that she fights for her students in getting them good teachers and getting more good teachers in front of her mostly disadvantaged students. And as a result, she was creating a culture of respect and tolerance at school where no student, regardless of household income and or disability, was stigmatized. There are other examples too, but in the interest of time, I will not mention these. Nevertheless, as my colleagues and I argue, to be in the best position to achieve equity in our institutions, the commitment from education professionals must, however, be constant and auto-renewing, underpinned by a collective and individual energy that is deliberate and purposeful, and that pursues the rights, the well-being, and the interests of all. Conference, the scale of our problem is not easy. The primary principal noted that despite best intentions, education professionals can and sometimes do get things wrong. They do and can sometimes unwittingly find themselves supporting or being complicit with various isms. This highlights the personal nature of social justice as a concept and the importance and the need for collective vigilance in doing social justice work. That is, in as much as political savvy and sophistication may be needed to enact and implement social justice work, it also requires constant self and collegial check-in in order to meet the accountability bar. Education professionals, irrespective of what country they are located in or in what type of institutions they work, have a duty of care to those they serve and lead. In discharging this duty, they must use the power associated with their position and status as leaders and servants and activists to do all they can to transform statements of intent into embedded practice.
Discharging these duties in ways that are carefully planned will enable them to widen and deepen their social justice work in ways that secure and safeguard, and in ways that are more likely to yield a positive return on investments for all concerned. Social justice is about equity and devising schemes and strategies that reduce or eliminate unfair practices in education. And in education, it is a social justice imperative. Conference, thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul, for a stirring